If you are using the service sheet, you'll see that a text has been offered in 1 Samuel chapter 1 and verse 20, a small reflection. There's a number of other similar expressions that we might turn to in the area that we're looking at this evening, but if we were to remember the name that we have given to this son, this child, born to Hannah, she gave him the name Samuel, saying, "Because I have asked for him from the Lord." And I propose to consider this evening with you, we might say, the subject of Samuel and the Lord. And there it begins. Sometimes we perhaps tend to find the stories in the Bible a little bit less demanding to get to grips with than what we sometimes call the theology. Don't ever do that. Don't ever say that theology is difficult. If you have any regard for the Lord at all, you are a theologian. And the question is whether you are equipping yourself as such or not. But you know what I mean. There are times that we think that there are certain passages that just seem to be teaching, and the stories we find that bit more easy to get a hold of. Not that we should either be expecting to find it easy to get profit from the Bible. It is something that is against our nature in the way that we are born in original sin and so on. And if the safety of your soul is the most important thing in life, is it not, then it ought to engage you with a greater effort than anything else, how much we devote to so many things. But the Bible can often take a back seat. But yet, when you are tired, you've been laboring perhaps and you're tired, and then some kinds of food, for example, is a bit easier to eat than others, and it might be the best way to get the energy you need right then. And so for a little while, I would wish to turn to one very significant character in the Old Testament, this man Samuel, for a few weeks at least in the evening service. You might then ask, why here? Why turn here? Why turn even to the Old Testament? Turn to the Old Testament. Let me answer that for just very quickly for a moment. Just recently at the end of our street, and some of you who've been up and down, you've noticed that there was building work going on. There are new houses at the end of the street. And very early on in that process, the scaffolding lorries came in, and the men put up pipes and planks and put up all this scaffolding, you know what it's for, so that the builders can get up there and put the building up on the inside of the scaffolding. Now, although there were no walls at that stage of the house, once the scaffolding went up, we could begin to get some idea of the size of the house, that it was going to be two stories, it was going to be so wide and so deep, and so on. And someone likened the Old Testament to scaffolding. But you can get some idea of the final building. You have to have the scaffolding for the final building to be raised, to be achieved. But then you also need to move on from it and need to live in the house. One of the great Jewish evangelists, I think he's, as best I know, he's still alive, Ernest Lloyd, he once said, as a converted Jew himself, he said, "The Jews, they have the truth, but not all of it." And so there is great value in taking the Old Testament. It is the foundation for what is to come. Samuel is part of that formative story, leading to the greater and the complete structure which God has been building and was building even then. Samuel, I believe, does point to Christ in particular. But Samuel also served a necessary purpose in his own time. He is not just a myth or a legend to symbolize the real Christ who was to come. It's not just words, not just a story. The real Christ came through Israel. And this Israel had to be, in order for Christ to come through, it had to be preserved and strengthened through all the different ages. This Israel had to be ruled as well by another forerunner to Jesus, the King of God's choosing, whom Samuel anointed. There are a number of aspects like this, which mean that Samuel does need to be read, studied, thought upon, and understood. And this evening, well, I can't do that in its finest detail, but to some extent that we might be able to do this over the next few weeks. And this evening, I propose to look at Samuel, especially in relation to the Lord, the God of Israel, as I think this is the central factor in the whole story if we are to perceive the other parts adequately. I would also plan to consider him in relation to God's people, and then thirdly in relation to the leaders in Israel. And these are the three, I think, three key parts that you will find frequently, if not always, in, for example, the prophets and so on, as we go through the Old Testament. And so, to look at some aspects of Samuel's life, and especially the Lord's part in them, Samuel and the Lord, and to turn this evening just to remark a little on Samuel's birth, and then Samuel's childhood, also Samuel's devotion to the Lord, and Samuel's role as given by the Lord. So Samuel's birth, his childhood, his devotion, and his role, especially as we consider Samuel before the Lord. Samuel's birth, then, first of all. Perhaps a good bit of this story, as we've just read it, you've been reminded, I trust, in many cases, perhaps you know quite a bit of this story. You ought to. Here is a man of Ephraim, his name Elkanah. He has these two wives, and there was trouble between them. And we read in verse 6, there was trouble. They were rivals, because there was one that he loved better, although she was unable to have any children. And she was provoked by the other who had plenty. They also, we read, an important part of this unfolding story is that they were quite faithful in an annual visit to a central place of worship, the tabernacle, which was pitched at Shiloh. It wasn't Jerusalem, that was much later on that the temple was built there. And became the center of worship, but Shiloh was for a time. And then we read that Hannah went with her husband and family, and she came on this particular occasion, and she prayed to the Lord and wept in anguish, in verse 10. Remember the way that she did this. She was moving her mouth, but not audibly, and the priest was there observing, and he prejudged her as drunk. But she was stirred in her spirit. She was in anguish. She was thoroughly engaged in reaching God and crying out to the Lord. And her prayer in particular was that she might be granted a male child, a son. And along with that prayer, that God might give her what she sought, what she desired, she added a vow. She said that she would give this son straight back to God. Later on we read the word that she lent him to the Lord, but it was for all his life, as long as he lives. He was to be devoted to the Lord in such a way, the last clause that we have in verse 11, no razor shall come upon his head. This was to be a symbol of his devotion, his separation to God. I certainly can't help but notice as I read this, and I think it's something that you all should, is how there are similarities to a number of other unusual births and promised children in the Bible. There were sons who were announced in a particular way, in a couple of cases at least, apart from Hannah, there were mothers who had not been able to bear children. And yet God insisted that they would have children, thus, I think, marking them out as very special children, special sons, to be particular servants of God. There was Isaac, the son of Abraham and Sarah. There was John the Baptist, son of Elizabeth and Zechariah. There was this Samuel. There were others who were announced. There was Samson, who was announced by an angel in a special way, and another who was announced by an angel in a very special way, of course, was Jesus himself. And there is a touch of connection, I think, in that already, now that we know the story of Jesus, to get us thinking. But even then, there was to be something marked about this child, Samuel. Hannah vowed that no razor would come upon his head. Samson was another whose hair was not to be cut, and there was a group of people who were separated to the Lord, as described in Numbers chapter 6, and they were called Nazarites. And amongst other things, like Samson, not to touch wine, their hair was not to be cut as long as their vow was waiting to be fulfilled. And in this case, the vow was for the length of his life. So this is how Samuel came on the scene, or at least this is how it begins, with this prayer unto the Lord. Hannah knew that she needed the Lord's work in her life if she was to have a child. Now, alongside this, we have the people of Israel at large, and the tabernacle, and the place where God chose to mark his presence, and where the people were to worship God. The nearest, we might say, that Israel knew to a spokesman for God at that time would have been Eli, the priest. The priest, one of his roles, it wasn't just to be there to do the sacrificing, it was also to teach the people. And we find here perhaps something of that, where Eli spoke with Hannah, and she answered, and then Eli, you might almost say, has the audacity, but perhaps there is a hint behind it that the Lord had spoken with him. Eli answered. He didn't know what the terms of this prayer were, but he answered in verse 17 to Hannah, "Go in peace, and the God of Israel grant your petition, which you have asked of him." Eli gave Hannah an assurance that she would receive the answer she desired. And she responds in faith. "Let your hand maidservant find favor in your sight." And look, she went her way and ate. She had not been eating because of her despair over this situation. And her face was no longer sad. There was a transformation about her because of this answer of Eli, the Lord's servant at the time. And in due course she did have a son. Down to verse 20, she bore a son, gave him the name Samuel, and the explanation is there. His name really means something along the lines of "heard of God," that God heard her. Very similar to Ishmael. You can perhaps even see the similarity in the names. He was again a child because God had heard the prayer of his parent. So there was, first of all, then Samuel's birth and the Lord's hand in that, very much an answer to prayer, his mother's longing. And we might even say, perhaps that longing was all the greater and her anguish was all the greater because of the provocation of his, well, who was he? Was she? Perhaps his stepmother, we might say. And all of these things were then used by the Lord to bring out this child who was to be separated to him. His birth is significant in that. And then we go on to read of his childhood. I don't know how she did it, but she established in her heart that the time would come after he was weaned, this child, this son of hers, Samuel. After he was weaned means that he no longer needed her milk, and so he was able to take food and live independently, we might say. But although in some cultures that can go on, it seems, even now, until the age of perhaps 3 or 4, to you notice how the record here tells us that when she took him, she had weaned him in verse 24 of chapter 1, she took him to the house of the Lord in Shiloh, and then a special sentence, the child was young. I think that's to drive the point home just how young he was. We can't say exactly, but he was just a little child, a little tot. And he was taken to live with Eli. He was a growing child. Later on, it tells us that every time that she went back to the tabernacle, every year she would take a new garment for him. He was probably needing it as he grew and wore each one out. But he was taken even then by Hannah herself. She had made a vow to God, and she was going to fulfill it. What a testimony that itself is to Samuel as he grows up. Perhaps he could not have understood it. I was thinking, well, it must have tugged at her heart. What about his little child? But then the prayer follows in chapter 2 from the beginning, my heart rejoices in the Lord. And so on. She speaks about his God's salvation. There is none holy like the Lord. Her focus is on the Lord himself. Again, what a wonderful preparation for this child, for all that lay ahead of him. And so from then on, Samuel lived at Shiloh among the priests. Among the priests. And of the priests, there was Eli himself, and he had two sons, much older. They were men older than Samuel. And there is a very sharp contrast set for us. There is the prayer of Hannah, and then we go and read about these two sons of Eli. They were corrupt in chapter 2, verse 12, and did not know the Lord. Yet they were in that office, that role, as priests. How could they lead the people? That continues to verse 17, and verse 18 begins, but. Very strong contrast. They were corrupt, they were careless with holy things, contrasted with this holy, consecrated child. Eli's sons were causing the people of Israel to abhor the offering of the Lord, to despise this whole exercise of sacrifice each year or whenever it might be that they would come for it. But instead of that, Samuel ministered before the Lord. He served in God's sight. The contrast is deliberate, I think, in this record. That we are to see first the contrast with Hannah herself, and then the sons of Eli. As the leaders, the priests were the leaders of the time. There were no kings. There were occasionally judges. But the priesthood was supposed to be continuous. And where were they leading the people? We see that later on when we see what all that happened with the ark that ended up in the hands of the Philistines. And so this little child is being raised up. Even as a child, he ministered before the Lord. There was a prophecy then, at the second part of chapter 2, against Eli and his household. He did raise a challenge to his sons, but they ignored him. And a man of God came to Eli and spoke to him at some length. And that, so it's what we read on into chapter 3 is not the first time that Eli has heard all of this. It's in chapter 3 that we come to perhaps the best known story of Samuel, which we didn't read earlier, where he heard the Lord calling him a number of times. But remember, he thought it was Eli until Eli, perhaps a little bit slow off the mark in the middle of the night, but there was something wise in him as he told Samuel how to respond. He realized that the Lord was in this. And it's often here that the lesson is taken out of it for little children when the story is told. It's a very remarkable story, and the lesson taken out that we must listen to God as Samuel did when he was led and understood this. Yes, that's important, an important response. But perhaps even more important than that is that God was at work. This is to consider what God was about. And that's where this contrast is especially significant. When you put it within its context, you see that contrast being built up. And this is telling us that God had something to say in Israel. Something new to say. He was preparing the way that this young boy, someone clean, as it were, untouched with the foulness that had been going on. Here is another one to take on the task of hearing and passing on his word. That's why we read towards the end of chapter 3 and into 4 how repeatedly it tells us about the Lord was with him and let none of his words fall to the ground. All Israel knew that Samuel had been established as a prophet of the Lord, a prophet being God's spokesman. Then the Lord appeared again in Shiloh, for the Lord revealed himself to Samuel by the word of the Lord. And the word of Samuel came to all Israel. This is what is especially significant at this particular point. Samuel was, we discover, we have it confirmed to us in 1 Chronicles chapter 6, amongst all the other names you find Samuel, son of Elkanah, 1 Chronicles 6:33. And there we find that he is of one of the families of Levi. He was not of the priestly line, but one of the other families, one of the other three sons of Levi. And so he was, though not himself a priest, yet he could well have had a role in any case in and around the tabernacle. But it was the priests. I mentioned this already. It was the priests who were originally the ones appointed to teach the people about the application of the law of God. And many a time the priests failed to do that. When you read of the prophets and when they fitted in, very often you will find that the priests were not there. They were not functioning as they ought to have been. There are many prophets who preached even against the priests and the way that they were leading the people astray. And certainly at this point, the current priests were failing in their teaching and instruction of the people. And so God did need to speak in another way. Things had reached, or very soon after this, reached, you might say, rock bottom. Chapter 4 tells us how the Ark of God was captured. This was the place where God had said before, "This is where I will meet with my people." And it was taken as a good luck charm and taken out and lost to the enemies. This little child, God spoke with him in the first place and gave him a very heavy burden. Didn't we read how Samuel in the morning, he did what he perhaps usually did, but he was afraid to tell Eli the vision. It was a much briefer expression by God than was that you find at the end of chapter 2, but it was a repetition of that message, essentially. And Samuel knew that it was not a savory message to have to take. It was a hard message. But Eli pressed him. Eli must have had some sense. Why would the Lord be speaking in such a way to this little child or young boy? And so he pressed Samuel, and Samuel did tell him everything. And it was in accordance with what he had already heard from the man of God. And that's why Eli responds, "It is the Lord." He knows that it is the Lord's word to him. But there was perhaps one of the first tests that Samuel had, that he should be faithful to this hard word of God. And it's because of this that he receives a good testimony. All Israel knew that Samuel had been established as a prophet of the Lord. And before that, we read that he grew, the Lord was with him. And let none of his words fall to the ground in verse 19. I, for one, find very similar contrast in the time of Jesus when he walked on earth, and certainly since as well. But you look at the time that he was on earth. There were those who were appointed as leaders, teachers of the people, but they were faithless. There was one of the great teachers of Israel who came to him and had no clue about spiritual things, Nicodemus. Didn't Jesus speak of the blind leading the blind? Here were corrupt men making the people corrupt. Jesus spoke that men should beware of the teaching, as he called it, the leaven of the Pharisees. And because they were failing, certainly in that day, another was needed. And he too, we find, grew in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. Those two sound very similar expressions in my ears. We are, I think, intended to relate them together. But there was the birth of Samuel, there was his childhood, and I want to also touch on his devotion. We can't go into it in all the detail that's there. There are many parts, and perhaps it could be a stimulus to you to think again on the way that Samuel showed his devotion to the Lord. It runs right through the story. We might even say it begins with his parents. Samuel did things in his life amongst men which must have been very hard, but as the Lord led him, so he went. There's another reminds me of when you read about something that God commanded Noah. The immediate next step is Noah did as God commanded him. On three occasions, I think it is, in particular. And so it is with Samuel. As I say, it begins, I think, before he had any say in the matter at all. His mother devoted him, promised him to God. He was given. His father agreed with his mother's assessment and plan. He was devoted the way that you might say you're devoting time or space or money to something, some project or other. You're giving it for that. That's what he was given for by his parents. They set him apart. But as he grew, he didn't turn from that. He remained faithful to it. He remained, I think, not merely for their honor, but he himself took hold of the Lord. He served in God's house. It would seem to me the whole tenor of this is that he served in God's house as though God himself was his father. Perhaps Eli to some extent, but just the progression of his devotion from one stage of his life to the other. There was another as well, wasn't there? Jesus, at the age of 12, he was found in the temple doing his father's business, he said. Perhaps a reminder of this. In parts of the later story, I was thinking about the whole story of Samuel and reading there, and you think, well, was he ever distracted from his devotion to the Lord? I don't think so. There was a time when you might well say there was a real support and warmth in his relationship to Saul that he had anointed as king, that he had a great heart towards this young man. I think he did feel perhaps a great deal of compassion towards Saul taking on such a great task. But I think even under that was the sense of single-minded purpose to serve the Lord. It was the Lord who put Saul in that position, and he was faithful to the Lord's anointing. Because when Saul eventually did stray, yes, I don't think Samuel found it easy there either, but he had a hard message to bring, and he didn't shy from that either. He upheld the Lord and the Lord's standard throughout. In many other ways, Samuel showed that, you know, the little line that you used to get at least when it was a big thing with computers, it's the letters, what you see is what you get. Well, what the Lord said was what Samuel would do. And just so it was as well, wasn't it, with Jesus. So Samuel, I think, points us in that direction. It was truer of Jesus than anyone. To do your will, I take delight, as the psalm puts it. Samuel, in his devotion to the Lord. And that was borne out in a number of aspects of Samuel's role. I'll try and get through this last bit quickly. From the tail end of Samuel's childhood, which we just read in the end of chapter 3, there comes the first mention of his role as a prophet. Israel recognized that Samuel had been established as a prophet of the Lord. To be a prophet was essentially to be God's spokesman. Where God gave them words to speak, they would speak it to men. They were to be the intermediary with God's words. At Sinai, Mount Sinai, when Moses led them there, God first spoke directly to the people, and the people were dead scared. They feared for their lives. And they said, through Moses, they said, ask God to speak through you, not to us. We're afraid. And afterwards, God did use men to speak to them, such as Moses. And that's why we come again, we find this new prophet after a time of silence, relatively. In Acts 3:24, the apostles, they made the New Testament assessment of him as the first of the prophets, all the prophets from Samuel and those who follow. But beyond his childhood, we also read, and I think an extension of that, is that as he spoke God's words, it was directing the people. The extension of that, I think, is as described in chapter 7 and verse 15, so Samuel judged Israel all the days of his life. And if you know the order of the books of the Bible, you'll remember that this comes straight after the book of Judges, in the time of Judges in Ruth. Again, the New Testament makes the assessment in Acts that he was the last of the judges. He judged Israel all the days of his life. After all, he was the one who anointed the king who was then to take over from the judges in a different way. He led Israel to return to the Lord with all their hearts. That's also vitally important as the grounds for his work as a judge. Again in chapter 7, in verse 3, then Samuel, when they returned the ark eventually to Israel, then Samuel spoke to all the house of Israel, saying, if you return to the Lord with all your hearts, then put away the foreign gods, and so on. Prepare your hearts for the Lord, and serve him only, and he will deliver you from the hand of the Philistines. As he then went on to plead with the Lord, they asked him to make an offering for them. He did so, and he prayed to God for them. And there was therefore a period when these arch enemies, the Philistines, left them in peace. They were unable to make any progress against Israel. And then, as I say, it was during his time that Israel insisted on getting a king. So he was the last of these rulers who were, you might say, halfway to being kings. He was a prophet. He was halfway to being a king. He was not of priestly stock, but we find that he did many offerings on behalf of the people. Here was a multi-role leader of the people. He was needed at the time in all of those roles. In every one of those roles, things had broken down dreadfully. He was needed, a man who was so utterly devoted to the Lord, to bring them into transition. I've given several ways in which we might be able to recognize images of Christ himself in all his glory and fullness later on. But as I said at the beginning, Samuel also has a vitally important part to play in that the real history of Israel, to bring them into this through the transition to a new era of the kings, and temporarily at least, of a renewed priesthood. So this is something very quickly of Samuel, and especially relating to the Lord this evening. Perhaps you can see where this is pointing us. I think we have two things. There are those, you might say, fuzzy images that indicate what God needed among his people to lead them in righteousness and safety, the things that he sought from his people. Samuel does point us to the role of Christ. He was needed if the people were to be in a right place before God. But Samuel's actual work as well was crucial in bringing some stability to Israel. They were at rock bottom, and they needed to be led on to the next phase in their history. It was God working every step into place so that David would be raised up in due course. at the very right time, and out of David's house would come the great son of David. And this was part of the overarching purpose of God to bring forth the great prophet and judge and priest, Christ Jesus. Don't you find, as you read through someone like this, and I certainly don't want to spoil it, but what an exciting and vibrant story Samuel's is. There's something happening all the time. But as we enjoy it, let's also try to understand how God is shedding light on his own workings through this man and through the history around him that he came into and drew his God's people back to himself. And to rejoice in the way that God did not discard his people in that very dark period of their history. And some of these things will perhaps be unfolded a little more, as God willing, we'll be able to look a bit more at Samuel in other ways in the next few weeks. But let us rejoice in the way that God has provided, that he has worked out in the finest detail the things that have been needed for that unfolding history of his people, leading to the Great One who would complete the leadership in the three key areas that God's people have need of. So let us give thanks for God's word. May he bless it to us each this evening.